Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 261 of CJ Evolution. Yes, 261 episodes. We keep trotting along. We keep full steam ahead because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you for tuning in. We also continue to grow because of your ratings and reviews. I've been overwhelmed with the responses I have gotten from fans and people who listen to the show saying how great it is, how they enjoy the content. We got a lot of great guests coming up, a lot of great content. But one of the reasons we continue to grow is through ratings and reviews. If you have a chance and head over to iTunes and rate and review the CJE podcast, I sure would appreciate it. So excited to be partnered with Four Sigmatic. If you don't know what this company does, I'm going to tell you what they do. They make some kick-ass products, most notably their mushroom coffee. You're going to love it. I love the Lion's Mane coffee. I drink it every morning. It's good for you. It's better than regular traditional coffee. And best of all, you're going to get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. You know, folks, we keep getting the great guests coming on the show. My next guest is no exception. You're going to love his attitude, his charisma, what he's doing out there for the law enforcement community, and what he has done for the law enforcement community. Grab a pen, grab a notepad, whatever you're doing, take some notes. You're going to love this guest. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have Dave Acosta on the show. If you don't know who this guy is, you need to. I'm surprised if you don't know who he is. He's a mental fitness coach, motivational speaker, corporate culture, and trainer. He's also a Leo, or a former Leo, but once a Leo, always a Leo. Dave Acosta, welcome, my brother.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you here, and I don't know if I give you due justice with that skimpy bio I gave. Is there any holes you want to fill with that bio?
No, I think that was great. It's just maybe a little background for everybody is I started out, I did about 10 years in Vegas. Most of the time I spent in North Las Vegas on the SWAT team as a point man. Went to Seattle, did a couple years with King County Sheriff's Office, ended up working the counterterrorism unit there right after 9/11. And then I went into business kind of for myself after that, actually doing a lot of training with other agencies, overseas, mm-hmm. And did a lot of contracting as well. But the speaking and the corporate culture and all of that stuff that we're talking about, the leadership courses that we do and that I speak on, I took what I learned in law enforcement, mm-hmm. and also as a contractor now working with the SF guys and SEALs and these other guys. What I took from our community and I take into the corporate world is it's a message that that they're hungry for, which mm-hmm. is, how do you unify people and in a way where they're really more concerned about the guy to the right and the guy to their exactly. left. So that's I just wanted to give a little history on how I went from law enforcement into that. That's the message that I'm giving out there.
Yeah.
And then, of course, I'm sure we'll talk about Fight Back Nation. So.
Oh, of course. I want to talk about that. But really quick, we talked a couple weeks back about the Conclave of Warriors. And because you're part of the Eagle Rise Speaker Bureau with all these amazing
right.
speakers such as yourself on there, Jay Dobbins, Ray Cash, Ray Kerr, all these guys that are on there. And I was like, I told you, I was like, oh my God, I hope I get to meet, Dave Acosta down there. I hope you're at the next one, brother.
Yeah, me too. I'd love to be there. So I think we had a little conflict in schedule. So
now, how did you, I always like to ask Leos who come on the show, how did you get involved in law enforcement? Is it something you always wanted to do? What was the catalyst? What was the force that said, I want to get into law enforcement, I want to help people?
That's a great question. I grew up overseas. My parents were diplomats for the U.S. government, and so as a very impressionable teenager, I met a guy that was just badass. And I think it was when we were living in Costa Rica, and he was a DEA agent, and he wore jeans and T-shirts, and he was fit, and he had a gun, and
you're like, I want to do this.
Dude, Dude, it was in a foreign country, and yeah. I was just like, "What do you do?" And he told me, and that was it. I was hooked. So when I was old enough, I started really looking into it. I actually got recruited by the FBI because of my parents' background.
Yeah.
And they said, "We'll give you a foreign post. You just need to get a degree, and if you get a degree and you're going to law enforcement as a cop, you could, you know, kind of do both. Then we can bring you in at a higher pay rate." So I'm like, well, that makes sense. So I went and joined the North Las Vegas Police Department. And that's when I realized, dude, I want to kick doors. And federally, you ain't going to kick doors. Not like we were doing yeah. in Vegas. So yeah. that was it. That's now, how it happened.
Now, what do you think about – now, we don't have to get in the weeds with this. The Vegas shooting, Dave, I mean, I'm sure you have tactical, you know, operators that still – that you yeah. maybe keep in contact with down in down in Vegas, and of course street officers down there. I know the city. It's a stupid question, but I know the city's still reeling from that. And what is your take on what went down? And I don't know if you know all the intricacies. And I'm not saying get into it, but at first glance, I mean obviously some maniacs in a hotel shooting at people. But why was the government, and again, I don't want to get in depth with this. And this isn't, I don't want to talk conspiracy or anything. But why was it so? Sure. Why'd the government take so long to release some information? I mean, I think a lot of people were wondering that.
Yeah, I think everybody was wondering that. You know, it was such a chaotic scene. So in the beginning, you know, I understand that. I think a lot of people – I actually did a video on YouTube, and then I also was with Channel 13, which is the Fox News here. From the moment it started, they called me and said, "Get your ass in here. Mm-hmm. We need someone that knows." Mm-hmm. You know, so if you look at it in the beginning, yeah, I understand the chaos and the miss, you know, no one knew what was going on. It sounded like more than one shooter and, you know, shooting from different angles, different places, which he was, you know, he was shooting two different directions from that suite. But, you know, once it was resolved and, you know, things started to come to light, then I'll tell you my personal opinion on it. Mm-hmm. The hotels, they have a lot at risk at stake here.
Well, of course. Money.
And how this gets handled. Absolutely. And so, you know, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of, you know, like how long did it take Metro to really get there? And people were giving them shit about that. Well, they were right there, right on mm-hmm. the spot. And they were there quickly, quicker than people think. But, you know, I don't understand why the hotel guard disappeared.
Yeah.
Why did he disappear when he had an interview the next day? You know, what are they trying to protect? Yeah. Were they negligent? This guard got shot. As far as I know, and talking to some of my buddies, the guard got shot a few minutes mm-hmm. before Metro even knew he was shot.
Yeah.
Now, I don't understand how that happens mm-hmm. because you and I both know that if you're arriving on the scene of a shooting and someone says, you know, we got a security guard that's been shot, that's one of the first things you're going to know. Mm-hmm. Where did some of this stuff get lost? I don't know. I don't know what the reason for why it's taking so long, but I know, you know, that there's a lot of other interests here mm-hmm. and they're very influential.
Yeah.
And so I just leave it at that.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you because I know you worked down there for many years, and it just yeah. I was just thinking about that when, you know, after we were talking a little bit, and I was like, I got to get Dave's take on it. And there's so many still unanswered questions about
which is bizarre.
Yeah, I mean,
which is bizarre.
What did we learn from that? I mean, as law enforcement, I think I'm not talking from a civilian's perspective, yeah. but what did law enforcement learn from that, Dave?
I think one of the things that all of us learned, especially the guys there that were in the middle of this, we all knew this was coming, something like this. But you can't really plan a perfect response to it until it happens because yeah. there's a new dynamic. So, you know, one of the things that was learned was, hey, how can we better identify where a shooter is in an environment where the sound is bouncing off all these different locations?
Yeah.
You know, what is a giveaway for us? Also, hey, man, you had a shooter in a high ground position. It changed everything. You know, you can usually flee from an active shooter. As far as I know, this is the first active shooter we've had that took an elevated position on a group.
Yeah.
Because people, what did they do? They did what they thought was best. They hit the ground.
Yeah.
well, that didn't give you any cover. Mm-hmm. That didn't get you out of the way, but they didn't know any
better.
They
didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that was interesting was I think we have to look, and officers do look at this, but I think the rest of us that weren't there need to look in our own towns and think about this. These cops, he identified them. Mm-hmm. He knew where they were.
Yeah.
And he started, you know, focusing on them and held them down. So there were a ton of heroes there. There's no question. I mean, we know of cops that literally ran out into the gunfire and were dragging people to the best cover they could find. But the bottom line is, you know, for me, I thought, wow, this is very unique in that everyone was calling out multiple shooters. Yeah. And it seemed like it.
Yeah.
But it really wasn't.
We were talking a little bit off the air about, and you mentioned it, Fight Back Nation. Dave, you're all over the place. You're all over the world talking and training people. Just one of the many things that you do. I don't know how you do it all. But can you talk about Fight Back Nation and the amazing work that you're doing out there regarding it?
Yeah, so Fight Back Nation is something that we started about 5 or 6 years ago. It was under a different name, but Fight Back Nation is what it is we've gone out and created a program. Specifically, we started with teachers. So there's run, hide, fight in an active shooter situation. And I don't think that we need to discuss too much what runaway means, and we don't really need to discuss too much what hide means. Mm-hmm. But we've really started focusing on with our research, and we've got some great guys that we've consulted with in the past, including, you know, Lieutenant Colonel David Grossman knows about my program. Yeah. And we have you know, we're acquaintances, and then John Gaidick, who
John Gaidick,
you know, he's a great friend of mine. Yeah. And we've done a lot of stuff together, and you know, I've talked to him, Donnie Goodman, who was the SWAT commander at Virginia Tech. So, you know, these are guys that I have conversations with on this fairly often. And so we've identified some common denominators. The common denominator with these mass shootings is they're mass shootings because nobody's fighting back. They're mass shootings because mm-hmm. people are cornered and they're like, you know, they're turning their back to the shooter just, you know, because that's what we do, right? If someone throws something at you, you turn from it. So, you know, I think of Sandy Hook. This teacher was a hero. Mm-hmm. She protected her children with her body.
Exactly.
But she prevented the inevitable for 3,200 feet per second at 20 feet. Mm-hmm. So what we're saying is, now, wait a minute. We're not letting people kick cockpit doors in anymore. And air marshals aren't the ones stopping these crazies that are running at the cockpit doors. Who's doing it?
Yeah.
Civilians.
Yeah.
People are jumping out of their seats and tackling a dude because they ain't going to let a guy crash a plane into a building again. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing with our program is we're saying, let's shift the culture. If it comes down to that defining moment where there's a shooter and you, he can only shoot one person at a time. Mm-hmm. Somebody attack this dude. Mm-hmm. And what's crazy is we're actually training a really simple technique that the teachers – it's really easy for them. So it's not like they have to go to jujitsu for 6 months. It's a very simple technique. As a matter of fact, ironically, we're talking about this tomorrow. I'll train 150 teachers at a school district here, outside of Park City, Utah.
Wow.
So, anyway, that's what the focus has become with Fight Back Nation, is literally getting people to have a shift in paradigm, the way that they see and think about things. Just because he has a gun doesn't mean he wins.
Yeah.
If you're close enough, do something.
Yeah. And I think we were talking about this earlier off the air. We were, Dave, about how there's a misconception out there by a lot of people, not all people. I mean, you're training people out there. I think we try to educate people in my agency, civilians I'm talking about. But
sure.
There's still a large majority of people out there that think, all I have to do is just hit a panic button and the PD is just going to get beamed there and they're going to be there immediately and they're going to neutralize the threat. And what it just kind of segues to what you're saying is you have a couple minutes to do what you can to save your life, not only your life, but other people's lives. There is no safe place anymore. Would you agree with that, Dave?
Yes. And I you know, I'm glad you brought this up, because this is exactly what we're telling people, is we're saying, listen, you know, law enforcement is reactive. That's mm-hmm. the nature of it. You call the cops when you need help. That mm-hmm. means it's already started.
Yeah.
So you need to be accountable for yourself at least for 3 minutes. Let's just say by 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. So what we tell all of these teachers, tomorrow when I stand up in front of this big group, I'm going to say, hey, you're your own first responder.
I like that.
So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Are you going to sit there? Are you going to cower? Are you going to hide under a desk? Or are you going to position yourself where if he happened to come in that doorway, the unexpected is going to happen, which is you're going to attack him like a honey badger, right? Because mm-hmm. honey badgers don't give a shit. Okay. So all of a sudden, you know, when I first started this program, let me back up because this really will drive this point home. When I first started this program, John Guidick on the phone, we were talking, he goes, Dave, you know, these teachers are nurturers. They love these kids. They're patient. You know, he had all these complimentary things about teachers. And he's like, and you're going to tell them that they can physically fight back
yes.
against a guy with a gun. And so he was just trying to understand what my strategy was. Mm-hmm. And I said, John, the exact reasons for them, for me knowing that they're going to do it is exactly what you said. They are mama bear. They're mm-hmm. mama bear. And one of the things I had a girl, I was speaking at UVU, which is a Utah Valley University here out, close to Brigham Young University. Anyway, I was speaking there and I had a young girl. She raised her hand and in the class and she said, I don't feel like I would be capable of this. And it was interesting. I knew that she was a young mom. Mm-hmm. And I said, if your 3-year-old daughter falls in the raging Provo River, are you assessing the temperature of the water, the speed of the water, the obstacles in the water? Or your swimming skills? Hell no. You're absolutely right. You're going in. Why? Because if there's one in a million chance you're going to save that kid, you go and you do it because it ain't about you anymore.
Yeah.
And I tell these people, it's not about you. Think about everybody else that is benefiting from your action. Yeah. Yeah. While you're distracting this guy, what is he not doing? Yeah. He isn't shooting your kids.
Exactly. And
then all of a sudden you see that mama bear light bulb come on. And then these ladies are like, just show me what to do.
And I hate the fact, Dave, and I hate the fact that we live in this world. There's many great things in this world, but I hate the fact that we are at a place right now. It wasn't like this when you and I were growing up, but we're at a place right now where it's not safe. We need to have this mindset. I'm not saying you go to work every day paranoid of who's going to come through the door, but you got to have this in your mind. I'm not just talking about Leos. We know this. I'm talking about people out there who are going to listen to the show who aren't Leos or aren't in criminal justice, because we have a lot. You need to start thinking about this. I mean, okay, what happens if somebody comes to that door where I work? How am I going to react? I'm not saying don't let it dominate your life. You have to live your life. But it's unfortunate that we live in this world, but we do. We're at this point. It doesn't matter where the hell you are.
You want to know something? This is an interesting story. So here I am already studying this for years, right? And having the guys I told you in my corner mm-hmm. that already know what I'm doing and have supported it, including our local sheriff's office here in Utah, and actually everybody in the state is behind this. So anyway, I got to tell you, I got off an airplane on a trip about 7 months ago in San Antonio, and my phone was blowing up with text messages from my daughter. Now, at the time she was a rookie cop in Provo, so I'm thinking, oh my hell, what happened? You know, so I call her back. I'm like, what's going on? Are you okay? And she's like, Dad, there's been a mass shooting in Sutherland Springs. It's 30 minutes from you. And I drove my ass over to that little church mm-hmm. where this psychopath went in there and was executing all those people. And if you know the story, the neighbor ran from two houses over, jumping fences and through yards barefoot with an AR-15 mm-hmm. and shot the guy and then chased him in a truck. Mm-hmm. Yep. But I'm there, and then someone in Utah knew I was there. So the news people here know me well. So they called and said, hey, would you do an interview? And then the next thing I know, other people on the scene found out about my background. So I started doing interviews for different entities. And I'll never forget, in between interviews, there was a gal, I think from the Fox affiliate out of San Antonio. And in between the interviews, she said, Mr. Acosta, when does this stop? And I said, without hesitation, it'll stop when it's not productive anymore.
Yeah.
That's when it will stop. You're not going to take an airplane and crash it into a building anymore because we're going to stop you. It's not productive anymore because we're fighting back. Mm-hmm. When we're sick and tired of these wackos coming in with a gun and we're ready to fight back, and that's nationally becomes our mindset. When we shift that culture to, dude, I don't care what it takes, we're going to jump you. Mm-hmm. Because 99% of the people that are at a mass shooting are unarmed, right? Because I always hear the 2A side of it. Mm-hmm. Well, I would shoot him, or I'd do that. Look, you can say whatever you want if you're there with a gun during a mass shooting. But exactly. Right now, statistically, 99% of the people that are at a mass shooting are not armed. So what can they do? Well, friggin' fight back. The dude can only shoot one person at a time, and he has to reload.
Well, look around you. Look around. Grab that goddamn fire extinguisher off the wall or whatever, a friggin' pencil, and John Wick his ass. I mean, do whatever you have to do. Everything that is in that classroom is probably a potential weapon.
It is. And you know what's interesting? What we're teaching, and I, it'd be cool to let you guys get some video of it. What we're teaching is, hey, when you're inside arm's length on an armed guy, you can disarm him quickly. If nothing else, you can keep him from shooting just by grabbing him.
Yes.
You know? And again, what we're talking about is, I've had the teachers, you know, they'll grab and they'll say, oh, shoot, I'm doing it wrong. I'm like, no, you're not. You're not. There's no such thing as doing it wrong. Because Mrs. Jones, you've just grabbed this guy and you're fighting for your life now. And what is he not doing?
Yeah.
He's not killing your kids.
Exactly.
And if the rest of us get the message and jump in and help, then, you know, it will become unproductive. Mm-hmm. But right now, that's just a shift in culture we need for the whole nation. We need everyone in the country to say, we're done with this, man. And even if I don't have a gun, I'm going to get you.
Well, thank God for people like you, Dave, that are out there educating people, because people need to hear this, man. I mean, if we need more people like you out there educating people, because the reality is we live in a different world than it was 20, 30, 40 years ago than you and I were growing up.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Now, let me ask you a question. How long have you been in law enforcement?
23 years.
Okay, so then you and I both remember the day when it was Columbine. It was like, oh, yeah. Wait a minute, what are we doing?
Yeah.
That changed our world. The next day in Vegas, the very next day, we had a meeting. All of the tactical units in Vegas had a meeting, and we're like, we can't do this anymore. We have got to get away from people calling SWAT and securing the scene.
No.
What
no.
are we going to do? It
no,
changed
I mean,
everything.
I think, and we have SWAT teams, you know, here in Boulder County, and as you know, Dave, I mean, I don't care who it is. I expect my officers on the street, they get on a scene. They're not going to wait for a SWAT team to gear up. Not that SWAT's not important. You're going to go in. You're going to grab a partner. You're going to go into that building and eliminate the threat. I think we all remember, we've talked about this before, it wasn't too long ago, down in Florida. I mean, the deputy, and I'm not, you know, I mean, he's been berated enough, but I mean, you're just sitting out there. You're not paid to sit out there. You're paid to go in and eliminate the threat.
You got to go. And this is the beginning of the shift now, I think. It's fun for me. You know, I watched, and I say watched, I mean from afar, right? But I'm very involved with the SWAT teams here in Utah County and the Metro SWAT, which is Orem Provo. Sometimes I'm invited to train with them and train them. And just, you know, we have a great relationship, even though I'm not active right now. And, it's interesting because I know that they're teaching active shooter response in the academies because they understand, you know, building clearing at a dynamic pace. Mm-hmm. And I think about it, you know, back in our day before Columbine, you know, there, it was a different world. Now my daughter, as a rookie cop, she's literally going hunting. It doesn't matter if a guy has an AK or a 38 special.
Exactly.
She's going to go get him.
Yeah.
And she's not waiting. Her and whoever arrives with her, they're
going in. You're going in.
And people don't understand this. So law enforcement has made that shift of we're not going to wait anymore.
You can't.
So why can't the general public, why can't they understand? And it's not their fault. I shouldn't say why can't they understand. We haven't delivered the message to them.
Yeah.
Hey, you got to go. Your kid is in the river. Go in. Go get him. Jump in. And that's what I'm finding the key for us and the success and all the positive feedback we're getting in our program is, once they realize this is the child in the river scenario, it's not about them anymore.
Yeah.
They're willing to fight. And it's exciting to see these teachers, how empowered they feel, and the feedback we get is awesome. So the message is, we just have to give them the message. You are accountable for you until these heroes that are willing to run into the gunfight get there.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you do so much more than just train out there with Fight Back Nation, Dave. You talk about elite performance. You talk about teamwork, leadership, motivation. You talk about all these important topics. Let's just pick leadership for a moment, if you don't mind. And
sure.
I think leadership obviously has been a topic for several years now. What do you believe? I mean, you've been in the game in law enforcement. Again, you were all over the world training Navy SEALs, you know, these elite guys and men and women protecting this great country. What do you think, what have you seen are some of the tenets of good leadership?
I'll tell you, I spoke to a really big company here. They do about, well, just under $2 billion a year in revenue, a construction company. We had this conversation, and the COO and I were talking, and he asked this exact same question. And I said, look, the first thing that you have to do as a leader is understand that whatever you say is worthless. It's bullshit as far as everybody's concerned. It's what you do.
Yeah.
That's what they're going to base – what kind of a leader you are. And if you can convince the guys and gals around you that you love them first, then you're going to be an amazing leader. You know, I there's these two different words, right? Someone will say supervisor, and that is not a leader. That's just,
yeah,
that's a title.
Anybody can be a supervisor.
Anybody can be a supervisor. Dude, I'm telling you, you and I've both been in the job where there's a dude that's a supervisor, yeah, and we scratch our heads and we're like, wait a minute. I remember making a joke, and in North Las Vegas, we made a joke when I was a cop there. It was like, you want to be a supervisor, you have to have an accidental discharge somewhere. So it seemed like those are the guys that got promoted.
I love it.
You know,
promote that guy.
Exactly. It's like, don't do it again. Now you're a lieutenant. So, but a good leader is the guy that, you know, through his actions would do anything for you.
Yeah.
And so now you want to do whatever it takes to make sure that that leader, you know, that you live up to his expectation of you.
I love it.
And so I tell people, you know, the two L words, leadership and love, they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But love requires action, and you know, not everybody's capable of that.
Well, and I love it,
so.
And you know, but that's, it's hard to convince cops, you know, to lead from the heart in love, because, you know, we don't want to be soft, you know, we're cops, we can't, I mean, can't love. I mean, but I agree with you 100%. We have to lead from the heart. Sometimes we have to have those tough discussions, and you have to care about your troops. I'm not saying people don't. I'm just saying that we live in a new world. We have a millennial generation that's in the workforce. They don't care about the money. They want to be inspired. They want people to lead them. They want people to mentor them. The old days where you just throw money at people, it's gone. They want to be,
yeah,
inspired. Even in law enforcement, they want to be led.
There's a guy here. So we're about to deal with this funeral. Very tragic.
Sorry to hear
this,
about that. You were telling me that off the air.
Yeah. This young cop, Joey Shinners, was a great cop, young SWAT guy. Mm-hmm. Just, he was the best of the best. And his sergeant, one of his sergeants, a guy named Sean Elpson, he is a stud. A very quiet guy, very big, imposing sergeant, mm-hmm, but just humble, quiet, very much leads by actions. And, you know, they had him speak at the vigil the other night, and you know, there was a story that was brought up where this cop that was tragically killed, he was looking for the sergeant who's a little bit older than him, and he's walking down the halls going, "Daddy, Daddy, where are you?" Mm-hmm. And of course it was funny and everyone, yeah, laughed. But what we all knew is that is how all of these kids, yeah, on Sean's squad felt about him.
Yeah.
They really did feel like he was their dad, yeah, and he loved them and would do anything for them. And you know, you and I both know, at least in law enforcement, but this does translate outside of law enforcement.
Sure, of
but in law enforcement, we say that's a cop's cop. You look at a sergeant, lieutenant, captain, deputy chief, and there's leaders that are politically posted, but then you have that lieutenant or that captain, and you go, that's a cop's cop.
Yeah.
That guy is always going to have your back. As long as you do the right thing and you're honest, he's got you. That's an awesome leader.
I love it.
And, you know, but it's, that's not always the case. Like we said earlier, yeah, about how some people get promoted, it just cracks me up.
Yeah.
But, it translates what I learned and what you've learned in law enforcement. It translates into the business world. And this is why I think I get a lot of speaking gigs at the corporate level, is they want to know what the formula is, you know, and I'll tell you this, there's a different formula at another level outside of law enforcement that I learned by being around these SEALs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the Navy SEALs. It's the same thing in SF and some of the other units, but I'm more familiar with them because the two guys that brought me into contracting were former SEALs. And at the time they were hiring mostly SEALs in their company.
Mm-hmm.
So here I am, you know, on this one in a million opportunity to work with them. And, their qualification process is so stringent that at the end of BUDS, which is the Navy SEAL training program,
mm-hmm,
at the end of BUDS, you know, 200 kids might start and you might have 18 finish together.
Exactly.
They don't look at the other guys on the standing there on the grinder at the very end of BUDS on the last day when they say, all right, BUDS secure, you guys did it. They don't look and, you know, like I'm only 5'8", so I'm not, you know, I don't like guys that are 6 foot, especially if they're good looking. But you're standing on the grinder and you're not looking at a guy that's taller than you. And he's not looking at me and going, I don't like little Mexicans. And and no one's saying, I don't like that guy because he's black or Asian or he's chubby or he's a smart ass.
You're a brother.
You know what? None of that. All that little shit is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you're looking at? You're looking at dudes that are qualified like you.
Yeah.
And you would do anything for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, it was like another level, because I thought we knew a level of brotherhood, especially on these tactical teams in Vegas,
mm-hmm,
which we did. Don't get me wrong. We all experienced that in law enforcement, but this was a different, it was like another level of it. And I share it with these corporations. I'm like, guys, what is the qualification to be on the team,
mm-hmm,
here? And that's always the question they ask me. They're like, well, how do we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And I turn around and tell them, I don't know your business.
Yeah.
But there needs to be, if mediocrity is okay, then you guys are never going to be an elite company.
Yeah, because only the elite companies are going to survive.
Right. And they have to cut off the fat, trim the fat. If you got a guy or a gal that's not meeting the expectations and everyone agrees they're going to take it to the next level because it's not about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's about not letting down the guy to the right and the guy to the left. If they can figure out how to implement that philosophy, you know, that formula in their company, awesome. But they have, I tell them all, you have to create some type of qualification.
Yeah.
Something that everybody goes through together, and whoever's left standing is proud that they were left standing, and they look around and go, we did this together.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
It's interesting, but it translates.
Now let's talk a little bit more about Dave. What you were such, I mean, I could tell you're so motivational just by talking to you. We've talked before. What motivates Dave? I mean, what gets you jazzed to get up in the morning and say, you know what, I'm going to go attack this day with everything I have? Because I can tell you're a very positive guy, but I'm sure you have your days, like most people, I do, where you're like, shit, here we go again. But what motivates you? What motivates you?
Oh, you know, there are the days, the here we go again days, you know, like where it's like, oh, you know. But I am a huge believer in do what you love.
Yeah.
Don't worry about the money, man.
Yeah.
That's do what you love. Go chase it. And, you know, if you got to have a J-O-B to fund doing what you love, then do that. I get it. I understand that. So, you know, I don't really, I don't wake up. I guess a bad day for me is probably not really a bad day. Because right now I'm my own boss.
Yeah.
You know, And I know that my success and my financial stability is going to hinge on how hard I want to work today.
Yeah.
So, but I love what I'm doing. I love watching people have an aha moment when we're talking together or I'm doing a presentation and just seeing them go, oh, wait a minute. I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Yeah.
I love that I don't know what's going to happen today for me. And that, dude, let's be honest. This is why you and I became cops.
Yeah.
We're ADD. Dude, don't give me a list of shit to do and don't give me homework. You know, I couldn't go to a job where when I left the job, I knew going home that I had to finish something tomorrow.
Yeah.
What I like about law enforcement was I go home, my day was over.
Yeah.
I don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is amazing. You know?
Now, I've been blessed to interview a ton of guests, and most guests that I know that are very successful, like you, Dave, have some sort of morning routine. I'm just wondering if you have one. It's okay if you don't, but
yeah.
I would love to know what your morning routine is when you hit the floor with your feet.
I get up in the morning, and I will tell you this: I look forward to the morning. I really,
I'm a morning
do.
Person
I get
too.
Up, you get it. I get up. I am super excited to get up early. And
my wife's going, what the hell are you doing? It's 4:30.
I jam straight to the gym, and that's my thing. And right now, I've got one of my two son-in-laws, and both of them are superstars, but one of my two son-in-laws works from home as well, and he's a fitness fanatic. Both my son-in-laws are former college football players, so they're very fit. And I meet him at the gym, and we work out together, and we even have our own little Instagram channel. We do some stuff together.
That's
awesome. It's just really fun. But I love working out with him. We work out. So that's my morning routine, is go get a really good workout in. I come home, I eat something, and then I just, I look through, okay, what do I have to get done today? But I do not like to have homework. So I try not to, the day before, go to bed thinking about everything that needs to get done tomorrow.
Yeah.
I'm a very last minute guy.
Yeah.
And at first, I'll tell you, I've had a lot of guys try and give me business advice. Here's the issue with getting business advice from businessmen. They ain't us.
Yeah.
They're not us. So some of the stuff they're saying, yeah, I understand, like how to set up a company and all that. I'm not very good at that, but they are. They understand that. But how to do this or that or promote yourself or whatever, we're reactive guys.
Yeah.
That's what we've made a living doing, reacting, and we're last-minute guys. So
and adapting,
I've stopped,
overcoming.
Yes, I have stopped trying to say, all right, here's what I'm going to do tomorrow and go down my list.
Yeah.
I stopped doing that. I didn't do it when I was a cop.
Yeah.
I just reacted every day to what was going on.
Yeah.
And at the same time, though, if I want to be successful in my business, I still got to have a plan. But again, let's talk about a tactical plan with a SWAT team.
Yeah.
As the point man on the SWAT team in North Las Vegas, it was my job to go out and gather the intel, at the place I was going to hit.
Yeah.
So I loved it.
Yeah.
So if I want my business to succeed, yeah, I'm going to have to go out, gather the intel, and then approach someone and say, hey, this is what I can do for you. Get my name out there or improve my website or do an interview like this that really helps me, leverage myself as a speaker later on. So there's stuff that you can do, but I try not to – I just try and be true to my personality, yeah. Which is take it as it goes and try and grow it.
Yeah. So what's next for Dave? What's next? What's on your radar? You don't have to tell us. But, I mean, you strike me as the guy who's constantly improving, constantly want to go after it, do better, which is cool. I'm like that, too. What's next for Dave? Can we get a glimpse, Dave?
Yeah. I had some big news today. I won't go into detail about it, but I think that our Fight Back Nation program is going to get a huge shot in the arm.
That's awesome.
And probably I got to just really be ready because I think it's about to go national.
That's awesome, brother.
So that'll keep us really busy. And then, I still love, I love being on the edge. I will go to Brazil in April and spend probably a month there working, to establish an office in Brazil for our other company, which is U-Tactical, mm-hmm. which does all the training. We've trained probably 700 SWAT officers in Brazil over the last 6 years. And so now we're trying to grow our presence in Brazil. So, you know, between those two projects, I think I'll be pretty busy. And of course, any speaking gigs that I can pick up along the way, I love sharing the message.
Well, Dave, if people want to reach out to you, brother, how can they do that?
And they can just go, you can hit me up on Instagram for sure. There's U Tactical, so it's YOU Tactical and then _ Nation. Also, the same thing, Fight Back Nation on Instagram. There's all my contact info there. And we also have a website for both U Tactical and Fight Back Nation. So through those websites or through the Instagram accounts, they can follow us and DM me. I still answer all my DMs. I'm not as famous as my oldest daughter. She's got about 400,000 followers.
Oh my God, that's amazing!
Oh, she's crushing it, and so I can still answer DMs because I don't have that many people following me. So I'm happy to answer anyone that has a question or you know would like to get a hold of me. So
well, I appreciate it, Dave Acosta. Much success to you, my brother. Love to have you back on the show. I know you're a very very busy man. But again, much success to you and all your future endeavors, brother. Thank you for your service to law enforcement, your continuing service to law enforcement, and what you're doing out there, training people with Fight Back Nation, the other things you are involved in, brother. Much success to you in the future.
Hey, thank you so much. And I just want you to know it's an honor to be on your show. I love what you're doing as well and the message. You're inspiring a lot of guys, you know, just in conclusion, let me just tell you this. I love what you're doing because I've always told these young cops, what are you going to do when you're done?
Yeah.
What's the plan?
Yeah.
You know, start thinking about
it. It's going to end one of these days.
It is. And I think that you are a great example of, hey man, find something you love. You're passionate about it. Something that benefits everybody and start preparing because you know it does come to an end and you still want to be you know a contributor. So anyway, I love what you're doing. Thank you for having me on the show and I would love to do this again.
I appreciate it, Dave. You take care of yourself, brother.
All right, thank you. Have a great night.
You too.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.